Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. On this podcast, we feature audio from a webinar on mobile enterprise integration. Our speakers are Prem Betty, Chief Information Officer for Bucknell University, Frank Matthew, Associate Director of Enterprise Applications and Clinical Assistant Professor at the University of Mississippi, Jill Forrester, Director of Enterprise Systems at Dickinson College, and Brian McGough, Director of Enterprise Services, Integration, and Delivery at Indiana University. Our host is Steve Verona.
You're listening to a special mobile sprint edition of EDUCAUSE Live. Today's EDUCAUSE Live is underwritten by Dell, and this week's mobile computing sprint is sponsored by SunGard Higher Education, both EDUCAUSE Platinum partners. Now, our topic today is mobile enterprise integration at Bucknell and at the University of Mississippi. From Bucknell, my guest is Prem Betty, who joined Bucknell in January of 2008 as the university's chief information officer. He leads a 100-person organization of library and information technology professionals. Prem received his MBA in finance and MS in management information systems from Temple University. He also has a bachelor's degree in commerce from the University of Delhi in India. From the University of Mississippi, I'm welcoming Frank Matthew. He's Associate Director of Enterprise Applications at Ole Miss and Visiting Clinical Assistant Professor of Business. He holds a bachelor's degree in computer science and engineering from Goa University in India and a master's of science in computer information science and a PhD in business administration, both from the University of Mississippi. Prem Betty and Frank Matthew, welcome to EDUCAUSE Live. We're going to kick things off with Prem Betty and Bucknell.
Welcome, everyone. I just wanted to give a quick go over quickly a little bit about Bucknell. We are located in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, which is what I call really central Pennsylvania because we are about 3 hours from Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C., and Baltimore, so it can't get any more central than that. Bucknell is primarily a residential undergraduate institution. We have approximately 3,500 students, about 360 faculty, and 850 staff. We only have about 150 graduate students, so we have a small graduate program, but it's pretty small compared to the traditional undergraduate education, which kind of presents some challenges as we kind of talk about what mobile, as we look at, when we start to talk about a mobile strategy, was to really, since these students are already on campus, what are some of the services that we kind of want to offer these students? If you have a distance program, if you have commuter students, it's a little different equation than you would typically have if all your students are on campus and have access to all the services. So what we did was back in 2009, I'm going back even before the mobile strategy, we really started thinking about really the content which we want to push out to our faculty, staff, and students, what typically you would use a portal or the intranet for. And as we kind of looked at the mobile strategy, we said, well, we already had a framework in place where we were, it was a very rich portal that we developed, and we kind of wanted to leverage what we had already put in, the resources we had put in into our portal, and kind of then use the mobile as an extension of that instead of trying to start from scratch and see what are the services we're going to deliver to our faculty, staff, and students to start with. And we have a really robust student body, and we in library and information technology have a really fortunate to have a really good student advisory group, and we meet with them on a monthly basis. And this topic kind of kept coming up as to some of the services that the students were looking for. And I still remember it was almost about a year ago that we were sitting down in a conference room having lunch with the students and saying, okay. And they kind of saying, kept like kind of pushing us, saying, "Oh, this is our life is on the mobile devices." And so we started kind of saying, "Okay, so if we were to kind of have some of these services delivered on the mobile strategy, let's look at what we already have on a portal and kind of looking at some of those services. What else out of that? What are some of the things that we would kind of take out of that and want on your phone?" And I think that was probably the best approach that we took, because, I mean, the discussion became so much focused and meaningful because they were already used to using the portal to get the information. And now the conversation kind of shifted to, okay, now what do we kind of look at? What are some of the things that we really want on a phone? And so some of the things, basic things that we looked at with the supportability, the risk and the security implications, the branding, and how comprehensive and flexible it needs to be. And so we really have a good partnership with the Office of Communications. We work extremely closely with them, as you can imagine. I'm sure on your campuses you have the same relationships. So we kind of developed a really broad framework, and it was broad for a reason. So we didn't want to kind of get too bogged down with a lot of the details. So let's start with talking about a little bit of the supportability aspect of the of our strategy, which was we needed to have kind of use a strategy that because of the number of devices on campus, we didn't want to at least initially be bogged down with the iPhones, the Androids were still coming on, the Blackberries, and some of the older devices as well, which all they had was a browser. So initial strategy was to make it just web-enabled and kind of keep the OS out of the picture. So we didn't say it's going to be an iPhone app or an Android app. So we said if you have a browser, you can get to it. And so we had, for information, I mean, if you go to the Apple Store, there is a Bucknell app, but that was developed by a faculty member and some students, which is really good, but we as organization are not kind of supporting that, but we will in the future, but at least giving the resources we have, we're kind of saying, okay, this is right now our approach is to just kind of focus on the web piece. So that was kind of our overarching thing. We're just going to support the mobile version on the web piece, and we're not going to get into the apps piece yet, which I'm going to talk about our next in a little bit about what it means. And the reason we kind of, as we looked at it, since we've kind of already had a content-rich portal and what are some of the application we're going to be pushing down on the devices, that piece became really easy because we were just kind of taking information we already had and services we already had and then saying, okay, this is what we're going to kind of push on the phone. And then the other unique feature of our mobile apps is, which is on the next slide, which talks about the risk factors, is that we are pushing a lot of personal information onto the phones now, which students have access to on their mobile devices. And so this means students have access to their grades, to the schedules, to other information which is kind of restricted to our faculty, staff, and students. And initially, we did not have the expertise to kind of have that kind of sophistication to build the apps for all these different variation of phones. So sticking with the mobile version really helped us kind of get to that point very fast. And I'm sure if you want to kind of just see what things look like, I'm sure all of you have your phones with you. If you just go to m.bucknell.edu, you can at least get to the mobile version. And the one thing you're going to notice is that next to some of the listings, there's a lock, an icon of a lock. What that is that you have to actually authenticate to get to some of those services. So some information is public, but others is really specific to the campus community. Moving on to the next slide, which talks about the branding and the consistency. That as we worked closely with the communications office, I mean, that thing was really critical, that we need to have the brand, the design, the organization, and the content to be really consistent no matter where we were delivering it. And so I think that's been the other piece is to to make sure that, I mean, if you are going to kind of undertake this, is to really partner with the Office of Communication or University Relations or whatever it's called at the institution. Because, I mean, this needs to be a single effort, and it's normally I've seen that some of the IT shops are going to go create some things on their own, and then which is not going to be consistent with what the communication is doing on the website. So, but I would really suggest having a framework for branding from the start. Moving on, as we go to the next slide, we talk about the flexibility. And I think that's what allowed us to kind of really get this out of the gate so quickly was because we used kind of a browser-based approach. To kind of convert the portal and the public web services into a mobile interface. And I'm sure you're all wondering, so what's next? I mean, now that we already have the mobile piece in place, I mean, now we are kind of looking at, okay, now what do we take from the mobile piece? Now that the iPhone and the Android has kind of settled down, I mean, now as the next phase, we're going to kind of take into that and say, okay, that's where what the next step is. But kind of having that mobile approach really helped us to provide the services and helped us really get ahead of a lot of our peers to say this is what we're offering.
Thanks, Param. We're listening to Param Bedi from Bucknell University talking about the mobile computing strategy of Bucknell. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from Frank Matthew telling us the same thing about the University of Mississippi. If you have comments or questions for Param or Frank, type them into that blank line over on the left side of your screen. We will present them during some breaks that we have planned. So a number of people, I think, are picking up on the sense that this is taking a least common denominator approach, I'd say, that people are getting the sense that you're sort of limiting the use that you're making of the mobile device itself by making everything browser-based. I'm guessing that's not quite what you had in mind. Is that right?
No, I mean, actually, with the mobile-based, it actually opened up because a lot of the older phones that we have, I mean, anybody, as long as you had a browser in your phone, you can get to our application. So it wasn't that it was only you had to have an iPhone or an Android device. I mean, we have some older students with older phones that just had a basic web browser. So even they could kind of get to the services that we have. So actually, this was a much more broad approach than limiting it to certain phones.
Now, I was also intrigued that your approach seems to have been student-driven, that you had a student group, a student organization that was very eager. Say a little more about that, because in previous sessions this week, there have been questions about what the appropriate way is of
right.
organizing and administering a mobile strategy on a campus.
Right. I mean, I joke around on this campus with others as well. I mean, I think the students are the best gauge of what where we should be and what we should be doing, and that's why we really listen to our student advisory group and other students, and we have other methods to we do focus group with students to really help us get some what they are looking for and what they're coming, because as you can imagine, Steve, I mean, every year the students come have different expectations, so we just can't kind of be in a status quo and say, okay, we'll tell them what they want, but I think it needs to be a two-way street.
One other question during this break, did you update your branding in any way since you did have a branding sense to this? Did the
right.
fact that you're suddenly doing mobile give you a chance to change your branding?
No, we did not. I mean, we kind of used the branding that we have on a portal and a website and kind of followed the same framework. So we didn't kind of create a third brand which looked something which was totally different than. So our goal was to kind of have a uniform experience for visitors, faculty, staff, and students, whether they were on their phone, on the PC, on their iPad, or wherever they were, that's what they would get.
We'll hang on to the questions that have been coming in and get to as many of them as we can over the course of this hour. We've got some planned breaks, but remember, we're also going to be sticking around for another hour afterwards, and in fact, Param will be with us during that hour in addition to two additional guests. So we may be able to get to some of these questions later, but in the meantime, Param, I will send you back to your presentation at slide 8.
Sure. To get a little more dive into some of the what the tools that we use and what are the services that we're offering, We actually went with MIT's mobile framework, which is, as you may know, is an open source community that we really liked and leveraged. And we had great staff who were really able to dive into this and create the mobile framework that we were looking for. And so we didn't have to kind of engage a third party to kind of give us what we were looking for. On a side, I'll tell you a story. I mean, without naming the company, we actually had a demo with a company as we were looking at some of the next mobile strategies, and they came back to us after their demo and what we had done, and their response to us was, "Well, you are already ahead of where we are." So, which was, I think, really good to hear from somebody who was trying to sell us something. And as you kind of move to the next slide, we're kind of looking at if you haven't logged on from your phone, if you look at Bucknell's mobile web, I mean, this is the changing menu. I mean, this changes as we talk to students, as we talk to faculty, staff, and we're going to be adding additional services to these. So if you look at them, I mean, we have some of the directory. We have actually one of the most popular items on this today's menu is the students want to know what's being served in the various locations on campus. We have an events calendar, campus map. But as you kind of look down, we have what's called the Campus Message Center, final grades, course schedule. You'll see a lock next to them, and that's what I was talking about earlier. Those are all password protected sites using our CAS services. So if you click on those, you'll be asked for your single sign-on password, username, password. And once you kind of put that in, then it'll kind of give you those details. So those are some of the security levels that kind of helped us put these on without having to kind of worry about the device-specific security issues that I was referring to earlier. As we kind of look at some of the examples of some of the campus services, like I said, we have dining. We have the library services, if you look at, on the left-hand side, I mean, if students can check, search our catalog. They can do a single search. We use Summon as a single search on campus, but again, you'll see a lock next to it. That means they'll have to log in. So these are kind of restricting some of the services, but the others are kind of open to the public. On the right-hand side, you see just a snapshot of the dining menu and the various locations. Actually, they can click on the right side of that, and that will kind of give them the details as to even the pricing, the calories, the fat content. I mean, we've developed an application where the dining services just enters the information, and then it kind of feeds into these systems. Bucknell is a banner school, we've done a lot of integration just recently with Banner, and again, this was released at the beginning of the fall semester last year. So we have students can actually check their final grades, which is great. I mean, they don't have to wait for a notification or log on to Banner self-service to do that. They can, in the middle, you see a screenshot of what the course schedule looks like. What you see on the right-hand side is something, again, that was developed internally for our campus portal, which is our message center. So instead of bombarding the campus community with hundreds of emails every day, we use what's called the message center, which is kind of a way to communicate with the campus community as to what's happening. I mean, and you see all the different categories that are there. Students can opt out of any other category. They can they can just receive the single digest for the day. They can receive individual emails, and that's really helped us really with our internal campus communications as well. And now what we've done is we've kind of opened that up on the mobile devices as well, so they don't have to log into the portal to kind of get those that information, and now they have it on the phone. The other thing I should also mention, which is not on any of the slides, is this past year, Bucknell also moved to Google Apps for Education, which was great, and that really fits in with our strategy. Especially with what Google is doing in the mobile app arena, has really helped us as well. So just talking a little bit about the environment, some technical details. We have integration with CAS as a single sign-on system. With the Bucknell branding, we use Oracle as a database, and some examples of some of the environment that we have with our servers. So. And we have basically two part-time developers kind of working on this, and we provide project management support on that as well. So if you're wondering from a staffing perspective, what does it take to kind of get to this point, that's where we are. So the question is, okay, so what's next? I think I alluded to this earlier. I think next, now that we already have a mobile framework, we want to see if we can parse the information now, now that we know what the phones on campus are. I think the iPhone and the Android wars are winning. So I think this summer we're going to kind of try to take the information we already have in a mobile website and try to create apps for those two devices, and kind of take it from there. We still probably keep the mobile web version up for the phones for which we don't have the apps, but I think as a next step we are for the fall going to look out for a rollout for the apps for those two phones.
Thanks, Faram. Let's do a lightning round of a lot of questions that have been coming in. Some of them you've addressed, but I'll give you a chance to expand on it. So in terms of displaying schedule, do students display their own schedules or the master schedule for all of campus?
No, that schedule is the student's individual schedule. It's the classes that they're enrolled in.
And I think you've already said that students can register for classes, or did you say that?
No, not for class, but they can look at the schedule, they can view their grades, and yeah.
Now, there have been a number of questions about authentication, and you did say that it was integrated with your CAS system. People are wondering if it supports Shibboleth or any of the other federated systems that are floating around.
Steve, that's a good question. I mean, Shibboleth is something that's on a list for the summer and the fall. So that's kind of the next round that we will be going. But right now, it's just CAS.
Now, you mentioned that you're using Google Apps. Why don't you say a little more about how you've integrated that with mobile? Someone asked, do you use any of the mobile device administration settings using Google Apps?
Not yet. I mean, I think right now what's really helped is, I mean, Google has their own app for most of these devices. And just kind of having the students use that and faculty started using that, I think has pushed others. I mean, it's kind of a indirect consequence of using Google Apps is, while they're kind of using the Google services on the phone, which is the calendaring and the email, they're also kind of using going to the mobile site and say, okay, let me see what else is out there for me to see. But we, as a next step, we will definitely try to integrate those two.
There's a lot of curiosity about how you're organizing the databases that are being accessed. Are your apps going directly against the ERP system, or is it from a read-only extract that's taken simply just for this purpose?
I'll need to. It's feeds from other systems that are coming in, so it's not directly accessing databases.
Someone wonders the project management support that you mentioned. Say a little more about that. And you know, there's a general concern, I think, among all campuses about how you make this work. So we talk a little bit about where the energy came from to do it in the first place, that you involve students a lot more than other campuses do. How are you administering it? How are you managing it?
Well, one of the things that, Steve, that kind of, and this kind of goes back even before the mobile was, I mean, when we launched the portal, was to kind of realize, I mean, we actually formed a new group in our organization called Online Services, and which is different from what Communication has, which manages the external website. And the charge for that group was to really kind of pull all these disparate systems that are web-based and what information was kind of being given to all these different systems and try to kind of consolidate all that into a portal environment. And I think we kind of just took the success of that into the mobile environment because we already had the framework in place. And I think it's kind of just kind of changing the mindset of how we do things, and not and kind of breaking down some of the barriers that exist in a lot of the organizations, even internally, so about who owns it. And I think that really put ownership of all our web services in a single group, and then we could kind of say, okay, then now, okay, we have these expectations and we have this charge for you that you need to get to. So I think that's that process, I think, is critical. I think staffing needs to be really defined, and the project needs to be clearly led by somebody.
With respect to the authentication, let's double-check that. Somebody asked what CAS is, and somebody else answered that it's an open source authentication system from Yale. Is that right? Is that what you're using?
That's true, yeah.
Questions about faculty use. So you focused a lot on students. Can faculty look at their course rosters using this system?
Not yet. Right now it's for the students, but that is something that's on our list to develop.
You've said some things about that you're not authorizing others to write applications, even
right.
though there is there's a Bucknell presence in the App Store. Say a little more about how you get that.
Well, it's basically just gets down to the supportability aspect. It's what are we going to support? So if let's say if Banner upgrades tomorrow and the data fees change, I mean, who's going to be responsible for making sure all those things fall into place? So the things that we are developing, we know exactly what needs to be changed, so we have a pretty good methodology in place to make those changes. Apps that are kind of developed outside our organization or any framework that's developed outside the organization, I think that's where we need to be careful about saying we're going to fully support it without fully understanding what that app, what's behind the scene on those apps. So I think that's where we're kind of drawing the line in the sand right now, saying, okay, we're only going to kind of support what we are authorizing and signing off on.
Thanks a lot, Param. As I mentioned earlier, Param will stick around with us for the second hour. We are doing an informal Q&A period after this formal presentation is over at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll have about a 10-minute break and then begin with our informal Q&A where Param Bedi will be with us, and we'll also be welcoming Jill Forrester and Brian McGuff. More about them later. But in the meantime, I'm going to turn the floor over to Frank Matthew from Ole Miss to talk about mobile applications at the University of Mississippi.
Well, thank you, Steve. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our agenda for today is, you know, what we've done so far. It's been about a year since we've gone live with some of our mobile stuff, and so I'd like to show you what we've done and what all is available right now through our portal and our homepage, and where we plan to go from here. Okay. As far as our homepage was concerned, we were thinking about a mobile interface last summer, and we were approached by a few vendors, and at that point of time, our webmaster, Robbie Sides, he found WebKit. WebKit was a freeware set of styles that you could use to lay out your websites, and that seemed to be a possibility, and so we decided to experiment and see how far we could get with trying to have a custom mobile homepage of our own. And we like what we saw. Our biggest challenge was being able to send people to our full site if they didn't like what we had on our mobile site, and then vice versa from the full site to the mobile site, and just reuse the same web server, the same hardware, and just have everything in one location. So we got that to work. Presently, we offer our campus directories, which pull up stuff from our ERP system about who you are. And like in the public view, we have all the faculty and staff listed. In the signed-in view, you have your students as well listed. We have news, blogs, and calendar. Now, as far as news and blogs go, we use a WordPress installation, and that has a mobile interface, so we've got that going. And from the mobile site, you see the blog in the mobile view, and from the full site, you see the full view of the blog. And then we have our campus portal. We are an SAP shop, and we use SAP's portal for our campus, and we could find a way by which we could customize it to render on the mobile devices. And then our campus map, which is also a custom implementation, we use Google Maps, but then we lay out all the stuff that we put into our campus, all the locations on campus, dining locations and the classrooms, etc. Okay, so how did we do our m.olmsk.edu? So if you went to www.olmsk.edu, depending on the device you come from, we will send you to our mobile device, to our mobile website if you are coming in from a mobile device, or to our full site. So we just did that with cookies. And as far as the web layout itself is concerned, we like I said earlier, we like what our webmaster found, and he helped us present the branding and the styles, etc., and we adopted that for different web applications that we made. And a lot of free samples are already available on the internet that if you want to choose and just, you know, use the right colors and brand that you prefer for your schools. So we went with that. And then about the content, like I said earlier, the homepage itself is a custom site that we developed completely in-house. The news blogs and calendar is, again, from WordPress and Helios. So that's the content that... They already had mobility support, so we could get that going. Email, our email vendor had a mobile interface for their. You can hear the silence in the background. We're having a tornado watch here. we already had a mobile interface from them, so we could directly link that up in our mobile site and get that going. Our campus portal mobile interface was completely custom developed in-house. We could leverage the same web portal and the same ERP system, but we could just change the view and come up with a working solution that will help us, that could practically enable us to have all the applications that we have on our portal also in the mobile version. And we have some of them implemented, and we are working on implementing the others. The directories and campus map, again, was, again, custom content. As far as our portal goes, our campus portal is very flexible. The API that they provide and the programming interfaces they provide let us customize everything from the internal desktop to the sign-in page and the applications themselves. So we could customize the sign-in page to look, depending on what device you came from, to render the mobile version if it's from a mobile device, or the full version if it's from the full site. And once you've signed in, we know from we could go back and query the ERP system and come back with what roles you have in the organization. So, for example, if you're a student role, we render all the student applications. And if you're an employee, we could also render employee applications. And if you're a faculty, then the faculty applications. And if you have multiple roles, you know, all the applications that are relevant to you. So now, and because we took this approach, we could step through all the applications that we already had and try to mobilize each of them as and when, you know, depending on the demand for what was more popular, what we thought could fit in better on the mobile interface. In the content, we also have this, just like Bucknell, we also had this idea that we could have one central location for all messages, and one way in which you could reach out to the campus portal, to the campus community, and split the messages based on groups. Like, for example, all male students, or all female students, or all everybody in the English department, or everybody in the business school, and have one location on our campus portal in the mobile interface as well as the full interface, wherein you can go and access this information. So that's called Ole Miss Today, and that's, you know, we have that also on the mobile version. And for employees right now, the only thing besides the directories we have is your pay stub. You can go and see your pay stub. For faculty, we plan to roll out their class roles as well over summer. And then most, so like, you know, as you can see, the bulk of our applications are for students. And we went live with our mobile portal in the month of October of 2010. And then if you see the usage statistics, we realized that, you know, we had about, you know, our campus size is about 16,000 students altogether, and about 3,500 faculty and staff on our main campus. And then we have our Med Center campus, where we have about 3,500 students and faculty and staff. But only the main campus uses the mobile offerings right now. And we've had about 85,000 hits to the site since October of 2010. And we've noticed that among the 9,800 unique visitors, 9,400 were students. So we're getting a lot of attention from students, not as many from faculty and staff, maybe because they don't have many applications out there. Also because, you know, the number of users are going to be less. So we need to develop specific applications for faculty and staff, and probably we'll see a high increase in the number of users. So how did we build the mobile interface for our portal? For each application within the portal and also on the sign-in page, we just check what browser you're coming in from. And if you are coming in from a mobile browser, we render the mobile version. But if you're coming in from a mobile browser and you've elected to use the full version of the portal, we store the information in cookies and then, you know, make sure that we render the full version of the applications and the portal itself as you move around in the portal. Okay. So instead of sending you to the direct full version of the portal or the full desktop, we send you to a custom desktop in which we pull out the rules from the enterprise system and render the applications for you. And all our web applications that were built in Java follow the model view controller paradigm, where the view was, you know, the JSPs, the controller was the Java, and since we use SAP system, some of it was ABAP, and our model was our ERP system. So we could, depending on the application, and depending on the device you're coming in from, we could render the mobile version or the full version as we address each application.
Okay. Is that it for that slide, Frank?
That's right.
Okay. And let me say, if you need to duck under the table, if there's a tornado coming, take care of your own health and safety, and we'll worry about the webcast if that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So somebody notices that, or at least their comment is, Bucknell has a preview of the mobile in a standard desktop browser. Ole Miss does not. Was there a reason before that? Was there a reason behind that decision? Contrasting the two approaches. So first, let's see if the interpretation of what you both said was right. So Frank, is it the case that you don't do something with the standard desktop browser?
No, I didn't understand. You can switch between, like, we decide if your user agent is a mobile user agent, and we allow you to see the mobile version if it's a mobile device and the full version if it's a full device, and then you can switch back. If you don't like the mobile version, you can switch to the full site.
So you do have that capability.
So both of you do. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, if you came in on an iPad, you might want the full version. You don't really care for the mobile version. You could switch to the full view.
Now, there have been a number of comments noting that neither of you have talked about instructional applications, any classroom use. Are you planning any of this? Are you getting any calls for it? Let me start with Mississippi.
Yeah. So for this summer, we are going to start a pilot project for attendance. We would like to give instructors the ability to take role on their mobile devices. So they could sign in and they pull up their class role and then pull up a class in their class role and, you know, maybe do a reverse order, like, you know, call students randomly, and if they're present, say present or absent, et cetera, and take class role using a mobile device. So that's, from that perspective, we're doing that.
Bucknell, are you getting any interest from faculty in mobile apps in the classroom?
Not so much yet, but I mean, we've actually on a faculty committee for library and IT, so those are some of the discussions that we are kind of putting on the plate for next fall. But being kind of a residential school, I think since the faculty student interaction is kind of the key. So I mean, and we don't have any distance students or online courses. I think so that kind of doesn't become a priority for us right now.
Frank, I'm moving back to the previous slide because someone wonders how these numbers and the student-non-student ratio compares with the rest of your website, the non-mobile part.
Oh, I see. Well, I guess it might be consistent because, you know, students would use the portal much more often than faculty and staff, because faculty and staff would come in at the beginning of the semester to maybe download their faculty would come in at the beginning of the semester to download their class roles if they want to, and then maybe towards midterm to upload the grades and final grades and to register their textbooks for the courses, et cetera. But students come in all the time, and if you notice the peaks that we have in there, the first minor peak is at the end of the first semester, at the end of the fall semester when they were in probably to check their grades. And the one in Jan is towards the beginning of the spring semester when they are coming in and they're registering for classes and looking up their classes and looking up their classroom where they're supposed to be and things like that. So I think it's going to be consistent on both the mobile as well as the full version.
Now, accessibility has been a recurring theme this week, so I'm wondering if either of you has faced that issue. Are you getting input from vision-impaired students or others who might have a tough time using these devices? Param, let me go back and start with you for at Bucknell.
No, Steve, we have not done anything with it, and that's certainly a question that comes up in our discussions, not just for the mobile, but also for our website and other online services that we offer, but we really haven't tackled that in the mobile space yet.
And Frank at Ole Miss?
We did look at our full version of the portal a few months back. We had a accessibility expert come in and evaluate. So as far as legality is concerned, I think it does support accessibility, but practically it's not very accessible because it takes a long while to get to an application even down the menu. So we're looking into that, and we've not really looked into accessibility for the mobile side as yet.
And let me get one other question during this break, though. I'll ask both of you, to what extent are you making library content? Param talked about the library catalog, I believe, being available on mobile. But what about library content? Frank?
No, we haven't looked into that. I know that the university library is considering mobile application for summer, but they haven't really been in touch as to what, and we need to get in touch with them over summer to see what they're planning.
And Param?
Actually, this summer, Bucknell is moving to OCLC's web scale management for a library system. So I think that's going to open up a lot more options that we have than we have with the current vendor today. So, yes, that is high on the list.
Thanks. Frank, I'll give you the floor back at your slide 10.
Yeah, thank you. So so we have some offering out there, and we are working on a few. We had we also linked up an application on the signed-in website of the mobile portal where we asked everybody for feedback on what more they wanted to see. And this week with the bad weather, students asked for weather alerts and things like that. So we already have a way by which you can sign up for optional text messages to receive messages when there's a tornado coming in and things like that. But besides that, they also wanted to see on the website. So we could put something out there that give them the current weather conditions and weather alerts, because they asked for it. And like I said a few minutes back, we're also looking into class roles for faculty and then final grades view for students. They also asked for registration, but our registration process is pretty lengthy. We would like the students to update their contact information and look into a few other things before they actually book for classes every semester. So we're not going to consider registration as yet, but we'll definitely look into putting final grades out there. Our main homepage has a mobile version, but we're also going to look into mobile versions for different websites in other parts of the campus, maybe departmental websites or the HR website and things like that. So we're considering that as well. And this asset management area is something that we've been focusing on recently. What we're trying to do is support our asset management folks, when they go out doing audits of the campus equipment, give them a way by which they can easily track everything and upload back into our EIP system. And then over summer, we are also looking towards a collaborative mobile project with SAP. After our vendor SAP acquired Sybase, they have a very strong mobile offering. And since we already made some progress with mobility, they wanted to come up and see what else is possible with native applications. As far as the portal itself is concerned or our website itself is concerned, we know we can already make all of that mobile. But what we're trying to do with SAP is come up with applications that are not necessarily possible from a website. Let's say, for example, evaluating graduate admissions applications. Maybe you could download all the applications to a mobile, maybe an iPad, process them, and then upload them after you're done, something like that, which is not necessarily web-based, but something that you could do with offline and then upload once you're done, maybe evaluating other employees or a supervisor to evaluate other employees and things like that. So we need to come up with applications that not necessarily are out of the portal before we work on that. So going deep into the asset management aspect, here what we're doing is we chose Motorola's MC70 as our handset. So we are developing a Windows application on the device that will call web services from our ERP system and for assets. So depending on what building you're on campus, it'll allow the auditor to pull up all the devices and then go around the building scanning devices, all the barcodes on these devices, and then updating our ERP on the devices that they have found. And then so the ones that have not found are the ones that, you know, we need to look into, maybe it's missing or it's not in the right location and things like that. So we've built a system. It's in prototype stage right now. We are testing it, and we plan to go live with it in a couple of months. So technology-wise, we use .NET for the front end, and we run SAP's web services, and SAP has a SOAP platform called PI. So the web services are going to run through PI and update the assets right in the ERP itself. Okay. And for native apps, SAP plans to be here. They're going to have some of their developers here in summer, in June and July. We're going to install their software and work collaboratively with them and come up with a set of applications that can be applied to higher ed area for mobility. So we are ironing out the details right now, and we plan to work on this through June and July and have some products at the end of have some application at the end of July. That's where we are right now.
Frank, somebody wonders, what was the basis for choosing Motorola as the device to develop for?
The markets, Motorola, and I think there were two or three other vendors, but it supported barcode reading. It also supported infrared. Not infrared. What's that? And the devices were really robust, and it supported Windows 7 platform. So we had some criteria there that we wanted out of the device, and also GPS. The GPS locations were much more accurate than the competing product. So we were looking at three or four products, and we finally decided with Motorola. And we're only going to buy three or four of these devices for asset management. We might have applications in the physical plant later on. So if they need that, then we have. Then we might have to get a few more for them. But
someone wonders if your asset management system includes taking pictures of the asset.
That was a request that they had, and we can support that if you wanted to. Yeah.
Someone wonders if you meant RFID.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I meant RFID. I'm sorry. Thank you.
No. Thank the crowd. Crowdsourcing information.
Yeah.
Someone wonders if you looked at Shop Savvy or any of the generic barcode scanners, which could be adapted to run on just about any smartphone.
Yeah, but now these things with the asset management, our assets might be in some really, in the basements or in some dark areas where it might be dropped. And these devices are really robust. Motorola can't, standards are if you can throw it from so-and-so height and it will not break. It can roll over so many times it will not break and things like that. So they're really robust handheld devices that you can do a lot of damage to without really hurting it.
There's quite a bit of discussion out there about how you find out what students really want, and then after you implement something, how you find out what they really use. And that sounds like something you ought to be able to get some input on from both of you. And Param, you haven't said anything for a while, so I'll let you take the floor first. I know you said that this started out student-driven, but what sorts of surveys do you do? What sorts of analyses do you do? What would you do different?
Right. I say, we do a number of focus groups, and like I said, we have a monthly meeting with our student advisory group, which also includes the Bucknell Student Government Officer. So it's a pretty engaged group that we work with to give us feedback. But we also kind of do data analysis on what's being used on our mobile website. So the library and IT website. The dining, like I said, the other thing we've also rolled out that I didn't mention in my presentation was In the library is probably the most popular place for students to come use computers. So we also have a computer availability module, which students can see if there are any computers available by the reference desk or in the lab, so they don't have to. So they can know that before they actually come into the building. So if they want to come use something, they know they're going to have a computer when they get here. So, so that's what kind of we're kind of looking at is. And we keep those stats and constantly monitor them. And the other thing is, as it also depends on the time of the year, when we have admitted students phase, the campus map is the most popular thing that people who are coming from off campus want to look at. So it all depends on what time of the year it is and who's on campus that day.
And I wonder if you find that you get different answers for, say, incoming freshmen who haven't used your system and then from students who've used the system for a while and have a sense of what it really does.
Yes, I mean, since that's an excellent point. I mean, we do, in our student group, we actually do try to have a nice group of students from first-year students to seniors, and also we also always make sure we have a graduate student on there as well. And that gives us a really broad perspective. The other thing that we do is we really participate in orientation as well, as we actually have a big event in the library, believe it or not, with a band during orientation, and we actually have engaged, when we have 900 students in the building, we engage them in different ways, and since they really haven't seen anything on campus, and try to get some information from them as well when they're here.
And Frank, how have you approached this at Ole Miss?
Well, if they don't complain, they like it, is what is our general approach. But on a more serious note, yeah, just like Bucknell, we also speak to students during orientation, and we get a lot of ideas from students and parents during orientation when they come in for the first time. But by and large, I think students would like everything they have on the full website, on the full portal, on their mobile devices as well. That's why we got the campus map in. And then, after we got the campus map, there was a suggestion of there was a website that, that provided all the timings for all the bus stops and when the buses arrived at the bus stop on our campus. And they already had a mobile site for it. The mobile content was already there, and we could have it linked up and made available on our mobile site. So from our campus map, depending on where you're standing, we can tell you when the next bus is going to be there. So that was something that was asked for, and we could make available pretty easily because the content was already there. But besides that, we also have some feedback forms on the portal where they can sign in and ask for other stuff beyond what we already have. And if it's practical and feasible, we try to make it happen. And as far as usages go, we log all our applications, who used what, and how often and things like that. So we can track and see which of our services are more popular compared to the others. So we noticed that when we went live with midterm grades, it was more popular than anything else we've had so far. And students ask for registration, but we think that, allowing them to see the schedule is high preference, and, it's easier to do. We've got that out there first, and we will maybe look into registration at a later point of time.
Now, closely integrated with the mobile devices and mobile apps themselves is social media, and somebody wonders if you've integrated any social media with your mobile app. And when you answer, let us know if any of the faculty are having second thoughts about the students in their classes using their mobile devices now under the official sanction of the institution, whether it's to check what class they're going to or other information, or, gee, maybe they're using it to Twitter or to text message their friends. Mobile devices and social media, how's that hitting Ole Miss, Frank?
I have not done anything much in that area in terms of in the two areas together. But we are working on a pilot project to build a Facebook app for our university. We're still in the planning and the development stages. We're not really evaluated to the full extent, but probably we could send messages to the app or post something on their wall, or if they use the app, they could post their wall or on Facebook or send messages to them. But beyond that, I mean, I also teach classes, and I think it's sort of become the norm now that students would may not listen to you and may pay more attention to their devices as the class goes on. As an instructor, I've kind of gotten used to that. So we haven't seen any policy in place in in terms of mobile devices in a classroom and distraction and things like that. But yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Param?
We actually have integrated with social media. So we have on mobile devices, we have the Bucknell Facebook feed and the Twitter feeds and also from YouTube. Regarding the other question, Steve, about faculty, I mean, that's a challenge is because some faculty, as you said, do not let the students use laptops or mobile devices in the classrooms. And so, I mean, there is no institutional policy for that. I mean, every faculty kind of sets the policy for their own classes.
In the couple minutes we have left during this first hour, let me ask each of you to speculate on what you would do differently now that you've been doing this for a while, and what advice would you have others who have yet to start? Let me start with you, Param.
I think, like I said, I mean, one of the things that we really want to get to now is the app-specific devices, because when we started, I mean, since we had such different so many different phones on campus, we really couldn't say, okay, this is what's going to be kind of leading it. So we actually follow Gartner pretty closely, the Gartner research, and talk to them as well. And now that battle is kind of settling down a little bit between the iPhone and the Android and BlackBerry to some extent. So now we're kind of taking that next step and really leveraging what we've already done and not throwing it out the window, but really leveraging and saying, okay, now we're going to really develop apps for these different devices and get the screen real estate that kind of the apps allow us to do versus a mobile app. So I think that's our strategy moving forward.
And Frank?
Yeah, so I just like Param, I mean, I feel that the market's still volatile. I mean, although there could be a possibility of a new, like HP might come up with a tablet that might again become popular. So it's really volatile market. We don't know where it's going, and that's why we've been hesitant to stick with for the consumption of the entire university. We've been hesitant to decide on a few different devices so far, and also how much resources do we have to devote to mobile programming. So if we follow the while building applications, we follow the model view controller paradigm, and we only had to adjust the view for different devices, full desktop versus different devices. I think we are better off in terms of total cost of ownership and how much money we want to invest in mobility. So that's been the approach we've been taking. Nevertheless, we would like to see what's possible in mobile devices, and that's why we have that thing with our vendor in summer and try to come up with applications that go beyond what the portal has to offer or what the our existing website has to offer, and look into seeing if that kind of functionality can be brought into mobile devices.
Thanks very much, Param and Frank. Thanks to all of our viewers and questioners from around the Internet. So we are being joined. So Param Bedi has been able to stick with us, Param from Bucknell. Frank Matthew had to leave. But we also have with us Jill Forrester from Dickinson College. Say hello, Jill.
Hello. Good afternoon.
And my apologies. Is it Dickinson College or Dickinson University?
Dickinson College.
I was right the first time. And Brian McGuff from Indiana University.
Hello, everyone. Brian McGuff.
And you sound loud enough. You sound loud enough in my headpiece, and at least a couple of people. Well, you're all seeing that are saying it's okay. So it's about 10 after the hour. So the purpose of this extra hour was to give us a chance to have an informal conversation about what we've just heard. Our experience is that there's never enough time to get to all of the questions and get to all of the discussion and to sort of expand things. We've asked a couple of extra people, that's Jill and Brian, to join me and the audience and our speakers. So let me begin it, just kick things off, ask Jill and Brian to introduce themselves, tell us who they are, a little bit about their campuses, why we might have asked them to join us to talk about mobile computing. Let's start with you, Jill.
Good afternoon. My name is Jill Forrester, and I'm the Director of Enterprise Systems at Dickinson College. We're located in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, fairly close to Perim, as he said, very centrally located in Pennsylvania. Dickinson is a four-year private liberal arts college, about 2,400 students, and we, much like Bucknell, are a residential institution, not a lot of distance learning. And so our foray into the mobile environment is probably a little bit behind some of yours, but we're trying to catch up. I think everybody kind of feels that. My particular role at the college is as Director of Enterprise Systems. My department manages all of our enterprise class systems, which include our ERP. We are a SunGard institution. We are also running Moodle as our LMS. My department also manages the Luminous portal infrastructure. So our infrastructure is very, very similar to Bucknell's. Our mobile strategy parallels it very nicely as well.
Thanks, Jill. Brian? And hang on a second. For those of you who are wondering, there are no slides in this session. This is purely Q&A. We have added, and I should have mentioned this, we have added the Twitter stream so that we can pick up some of the questions in the Twitter stream as well as the Adobe Connect chat. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
No problem. This is Brian McGuff from Indiana University, and Indiana University is one of two major universities within the state of Indiana. There's Indiana and then there's Purdue. We are a large R1 institution. We have 9 campuses in total and total student population of just over 110,000 students. An operating budget of just around, I think, $3 billion a year, and somewhere around, $650 million in terms of research ongoing. So most of that and most of the power within the institution resides on our two primary campuses, which is Indiana University Bloomington, which is the Hoosiers. We used to have a good basketball team. And then the Indianapolis campus, which is IUPUI. It's a joint venture between Indiana University and Purdue University, but is administered by Indiana University. So with the combination of all those plus the smaller regionals, we come at about 110,000 students. From a portal perspective, we forayed into that pretty early on. Our first launch of anything was in the fall of 2009, and so my group has been charged with managing our mobile efforts. And when we're talking about the mobile efforts, anything that we do in my division, which is enterprise software, is done at scale, meaning that we have and intend to have one solution that meets the needs of all 9 campuses and all constituencies on those campuses. So a bit of a stretch in terms of coordination costs and all of those kind of things like any many campus institution. So we've got all of those traditional challenges there. We have grown up starting with kind of a mobile web based approach, kind of, easy to get there quickly, don't have to retool all your devs. More recently, we have added support for native iPhone and Android applications. Our site is available at m.iu.edu and/or downloadable in any of the app stores for Android and/or iPhone as IU Mobile.
Thanks, Brian.
That's about it for me.
And I'm definitely going to cycle back to you and ask what it's like to do development at all, let alone mobile development in such a large environment. But Param, you see there in the middle of the chat window someone asking for a little more details about how you manage your mobile app. So how about diving into that And maybe I'll read it for those who may not be seeing it on the screen. It says, you mentioned that in addition to IT and communications departments, you've developed a new online services group. Number one, where does this group fit into administrative structure in terms of reporting relative to IT and to communications? Number two, how is the funding of this new group handled, particularly in relation to traditional IT funding schemes? And three, does the new group merely get the nod for managing projects, or is there some specific project management process within the group? And I'll warn Jill and Brian that I'm going to ask you to tell us how this works at your campus also when Farham's done.
Sure. I mean, the online services group was basically formed. It's part of the enterprise systems group, similar to a group that Jill has at Dickinson. And it basically, we didn't really add any new positions, believe it or not. We actually, because we had all these different functions, because we are a merged lab and IT organization, a lot of these functions were taking place one-off, and there was no coordinated effort within the organization. So kind of by creating this group, it really brought a focus and a strategic mission for the institution to kind of bring all the different folks who are doing this in the library, in enterprise systems. We had somebody half-time kind of a bridge in the communications office. So kind of bring these different groups together and really focusing on that's how we kind of accomplished that. Because as we looked at it, I mean, there was really lack of coordination between even within the organization to kind of the efforts that we're leading, and I think bringing this together was really helpful. From a project management perspective, the one thing as we're looking ahead, we're doing we just advertised for this newly created position just last week. We're creating an office of project management within Library and IT, and so we are hiring a project manager, not just for these the mobile project, but I mean, if you look at IT, has become much more project driven. And I think that's really going to help us with even our resources, because we can really take a much strategic approach to which projects we undertake and which ones we don't by having an office of project management into the mix, I think, which is kind of a new phenomenon in higher education, especially in small institutions. But I think in the long run, it's going to really help us with our resources and also kind of helping us with our strategic projects.
Thanks, Farham. Jill, what are your thoughts on managing this process?
Well, it's a great question, for us, we have really managed it without adding any new resources as well. When we first decided we wanted to put together a mobile app, we created what we called a cross-functional team. It had members from our library on it, our communications department, our teaching and learning group, and also our enterprise systems group, as well as our user services or end user support group. And together they have worked to develop a pretty light and agile strategy, and also to recommend a governance model for us. I've seen a number of questions that have popped up around governance. How do you determine what's going to be put in your mobile app and where it's going to be placed? And so this group really helps springboard us into this field. And really going forward, we plan on utilizing existing governance structures that we have for our regular enterprise systems, application development, and web management to help us prioritize our development efforts. We plan on utilizing existing staff, as Prem said, just kind of redefining roles that that we already have, repurposing positions as they become available to do that. So we're not adding any new positions either. As far as having to come up with new funding, we haven't had to do that to date. And as far as project management, we already have a methodology in place for managing application development and enterprise systems related projects, such as major upgrades and so on. And we plan on funneling all mobile development that is approved also through this project management system and methodology that we have. When I say that, I'm not including some of the teaching and learning apps that may come up in the future, as well as student development. My purview is mainly overseeing the enterprise related and class applications.
Thanks, Jill. Brian?
Sure. So I'll just go back through the questions. That might be the easiest way for me. So in terms of where the group fits into the administrative structure, the mobile development group and the super technical staff, I guess I would say, report into the IT organization. The IT organization is an organization that spans all of our campuses and so has university administration kind of responsibilities.
And how large is that? How large is that technical group?
So in terms of my mobile group that I have right now, it has been beg, borrow, and steal, kind of the same approach that it sounds like everybody else has had to take, you know, through these tough economic times. It's really just, you know, reprioritization of work for existing staff. That was fairly easy to do whenever we were doing just the web-based approach, because it's not, you know, learning a full new set of technology and having to have dedicated staff, because once you get into native application development with Objective-C and the different Java flavor for doing it on the Android and then the different for the different devices there, that's when I think you really start running into the need for a significant more amount of resources. So they all report to the university administration up through a centralized vice president for information technology. Now, in terms of the relationship with communications and marketing, that has been there from the very beginning. So we have, you know, an IT strategic plan. One of the things on that is mobile, and I was tasked with that responsibility, very generally speaking. But the flavor of our current IT plan is 100% dependent on us having good working relationships with the units, you know, whether they're cross-campus units or other units. And when you're talking about mobile, you know, it's kind of the next generation of our homepage, right? So the traditional lines of ownership in terms of our homepages mostly has been, at least functionally, in the communications and media area. So we formed a strategic relationship with them, and at times they've dedicated even compute kind of resources and staff-wise, but certainly are engaged with, you know, the overall, you know, marketing elements and communication elements for it. So I think that's a key partnership to have in any mobile endeavor, where you're representing the university as a whole, and probably true for all of us. So moving on to the next question about funding, it's all thus far been reallocation of existing staff and such. So we haven't really you know, done anything with funding other than pulling together groups of people from different areas and essentially reprioritizing their work. So long term, though, there is a small amount of funding that I think we need to keep up in the mobile space, and so there's an active proposal there, and I do believe I'm going to get probably on the order of, you know, one to two kind of ongoing positions to care and feed mobile, you know, and our endeavors within mobile. That includes tablet for us. So that's kind of the way that things are shaken down in terms of funding. In terms of the project management, PMOs are not in style at IU. You know, we had them at one point in time, and they got kind of a bad rap. So it's more, you know, project team based with ownership within the project team, and then priorities being set by various governance groups for, you know, student-related systems, for faculty-related systems, and for staff-related systems, and so kind of the combination of those and what are their mobile priorities in combination with, and this was said earlier, I believe, by Bucknell, you know, paying attention to the students. They're the ones that really know what it is that they want. For us to sit back and guess, you know, we're going to get it wrong 9 times out of 10. So having a channel of input where we've actually formally engaged students in the prioritization process for what we work on next, if you will, is kind of makes that that overall governance model. So the existing kind of governance groups representing the primary roles, and then involvements from student in terms of you know, helping us to prioritize what's next.
Thanks, all of you. Catherine, who is my colleague, Catherine Yang, I believe, notes from the community, will ERP vendors be able to provide more services within the next 2 years, mobile services within the next 2 years? Can they move that fast? Can they keep up with the rapid fire pace of mobile app development? Let me expand that question a bit and get to the question of, to what extent should campuses be charging out ahead and doing their own development, whether it's standalone apps or integration with their existing ERP systems and other administrative systems, as opposed to waiting for the development community to show the way? And I don't mean that as a totally rhetorical question. You know, obviously we want to lead rather than follow. But what sort of payback do you need if you're going to do development yourself? If you knew that a commercial version of the app was going to be available in a year, would you say, gee, it's silly to put in the effort to develop something just for a year? What kind of lead time do you need? So just this general question, we're doing this campus-based mobile development in the context of a world that is charging ahead very rapidly on mobility. How do you balance those issues? Let me start back with you, Brian.
Okay, sure. So I think there's a few different topics, you know, within that I'd like to cover. You know, firstly, I think you know, that it has become somewhat of a competitive necessity, and so you know, to defer to us was an unacceptable outcome in terms of waiting for, you know, our main ERP vendors to kind of deliver something in this space that would work for us. Second, I think there's you know, there's branding opportunities and kind of distinguishing opportunities from a marketing perspective that are advantageous. And then third, I guess, I feel like, and I'm not sure how it is at all the rest of your institutions, but, you know, PeopleSoft is one of our primary vendors. We use it for HR and we use it for student. But on top of that, you know, we've got a learning management system, which is Kai. We've got, you know, probably I could rattle off another 40 systems or so that we have that we're running. So it's not quite as simple as just saying, okay, well, we'll let, you know, our kind of our main or most expensive ERP vendor kind of catch up to the space, because we need solutions that cross those typical application silos. And I think that our mobile folks will demand that. It's kind of the same metaphor as portals, and where did portals come from? Well, we don't want to ask our users to go to 20 different websites, you know, to perform their daily activities. So let's bring those things to them. I think, you know, if we had, you know, 20 different mobile applications, each responsible only for interacting with that one particular siloed application, we would be displeasing our users in that same kind of metaphor. So that's my take on it, and I think then in terms of the threshold and the weight, you know, from the pressure that we've gotten, I think you're at risk to wait for your ERP vendor because local uprisings and efforts, grassroots efforts, will take place on campus. And if you don't have an answer for how those are going to make it into kind of your enterprise set of services, then they're going to emerge anyway, and your ability to then control the scenario becomes drastically reduced. So I'll shut up now.
Thanks, Brian. Jill?
I actually would agree a lot with what Brian said. I think the competitive necessity is a key here. I mean, that's why Dickinson wanted to get into this space as quickly as possible. We're in such a competitive area, with being a liberal arts, small liberal arts college. And our peers were popping up with mobile apps. And so to be competitive and to, keep up, we needed to do it. And we couldn't wait necessarily for our ERP. Now, that said, our mobile app actually doesn't tap into a lot of the stuff that our ERP provides at this point. The main functionality of our mobile app and what we wanted to get out there, we could feed off our main college website. We were just reconsuming the data that was already out there to provide those dining menus and that type of thing. Now that we're moving into more of the authenticated services, we are tapping into stuff that's in our ERP. We are a SunGard school, and SunGard has started an initiative called the Mobile Connection. And we are watching this very, very closely. It's a really interesting community-driven concept, hoping that members of the SunGard community will be developing functionality for mobile devices based off the SunGard ERP, and that we will have access to those so that hopefully we can integrate that ERP connection into our mobile app. But as Brian said, I think that the competitive necessity, it kind of forces your hand and makes you have to get out in front, and you can't necessarily wait a year. But then on the flip side, being a manager in this area, I don't set my developers loose on just developing anything, because I know that we have to support this in the long term. And the only thing worse than just having an application is having one that does not work well or refuses to work at all because you did an ERP upgrade and, it wasn't included in your testing plan and so on, or it did something that now causes your app not to work properly. So I think, when you're talking about an enterprise-level system, your users are expecting a certain amount of reliability there. And so anything that's tapping into those types of systems, you need to make sure, that it is reliable, that you've included it in your upgrade test plans, whether it's your ERP upgrade schedule or database, server-related upgrades, all of those things that can impact, any facet of applications that tap into your ERP system or LMS. And so on. The other thing I think that Brian mentioned that I had jotted down when I first read this question is this idea of the cross silos between applications, and I think that is really important when we're talking about the mobile space. As he said, they're not going to want to jump to 20 different mobile apps, and I think a lot of times when they're using functionality, they're expecting it to be integrated into one feature set and not have to worry about that this is coming from Sky or Moodle or Banner or PeopleSoft. They just want the functionality. And so that's another thing that can really drive, you having to get out in front of what your vendor may provide.
And Param?
I think I agree with everything that's said. I mean, and I think what it's, in my mind, I think it's a little easier than initially when you jump into this, because the way I think about it, I mean, I just think about it as building blocks. So we already have a framework of our ERP system. So we have all the data that's in the ERP system. We have all the information, the content on a website. We have all the course information on our LMSs, be it Moodle, Blackboard, and Osakai. So I think to kind of think of this, the mobile platform, which kind of sits on top of all these, and I think the hard question is initially is, okay, so what do you want to present? I mean, because you have 20,000 things that you could present to your end users, but what are those top 20 going to be? And I think that's kind of the where a lot of the discussions I've had with other colleagues of institutions kind of get hung up, because nobody wants to be the say, okay, and get out of the gate and say, this is what we're going to do. But if you treat this as a building block, because these technologies are going to change next year, so and there's going to be something else out there in the mobile space which we don't even know about it today. But we should be able to adapt to it rather quickly than wait another 3 years or 2 years before our ERP vendor or our LMS vendor kind of comes up with a solution. So that's the kind of the approach that I would like to see and we're trying to take is, I mean, this is just kind of a building block, and if things change, we just make those adjustments and then move on to the next platform. So.
Now, Parham, both you and Frank in the previous hour just described the situation where you, at the very least, discouraged, if not prohibited, developing of institutionally branded or institutionally targeted mobile apps other than by the official organizations, and there are issues such as support
from Buckner's perspective, no. I mean, we encourage it. I mean, actually, we have a great relationship with the academic side of the house where the computer science department is developing. What we are saying is that we will not be able to support these, and so they still kind of go through our whole security analysis and all those other things. But once the student graduates, and that's always a question with any project, any technology project, just not on this, but who owns it? What's the expectation that we're going to kind of continue to develop, add features to it? So, it's in my mind, so instead of running three or four different parallel processes, if we have a single strategy, single instance where everything kind of falls under, I think that's much easier to manage than try to manage everything that kind of comes out of the student project or department wanting to do something. And going back to what Jill said earlier, and also Brian, I mean, try to have one place where people go for information. So they shouldn't have to, like, browse through six different apps to get six different pieces of information. They all should be consolidated in under one umbrella. So I think that's what I was kind of alluding to in my presentation earlier.
Sorry to mischaracterize it, but let me sort of stick with the dichotomy and see, Jill, if either you or Brian have anything to add to that. We've certainly heard of ranges of campuses, on the one hand feeling that control is extremely important and being very concerned about apps being developed by students or even by faculty. Because of the issues of security and consistency, there's no denying the issues that Parham raises, and yet other campuses taking a more, shall we say, Wild West or anarchic approach and encouraging lots of app development with the idea of a thousand flowers blooming. And any thoughts on that distinction, either Jill or Brian, who wants to dive in? Oh, you see, I should call on people rather than offering.
I can certainly dive in. As I mentioned, you know, to do the things that we've needed to do to get to this point, I've kind of used the term beg, borrow, and steal for resources. And so when I've said that, I'm including any resources that I can get out of the academic community as well. Now, I would call our model a bit more of a hybrid model. We're not encouraging people to go off and create their own app that has, you know, these three functions. We really want, you know, an inclusive an environment with services. So it's been more of what I would say a partnering strategy where, you know, we may have a piece of work in mobile that might make sense for a master's level computer science project, for example, and this is a real case actually right now. So you know, what I've done in those cases is I've said, well, absolutely, we want you on board. We would love for you to
spend your effort furthering the mobile initiative for Indiana University, we just need to work through the logistics. And so the logistics really come down to, you know, making sure that your core team can spend enough time with those individuals so that they understand any of the development standards and those kind of things on the front end. But then I always reserve time on the back end of any of those engagements to what I would say refactor the code or the investment that's been made, because you know, the last thing we want to do is launch something that, you know, was written by students that we want to launch as an enterprise service, and it goes belly up because it either can't scale, or, you know, was written inappropriately, or, you know, has some security vulnerability that they weren't concerned about catching. So we have, I would say, an incubation model where we'll accept those various contributions, and then they go through a series of code review, and in many cases, certain things have to be rewritten. But on the whole, you're still getting more out of engaging that larger audience than you would otherwise, because the amount of effort that we find that it takes to refactor and to make it ready for production is less than what it would take for us to do it all ourselves. And it also, I think, is a bonus in terms of, you know, kind of making it an inclusive model. We're not putting walls up around our shop and saying we're the only ones that can do this stuff, because, you know, mobile is quickly becoming just expected, right? So I think, you know, any development shop, you know, pretty soon is going to be wanting to be in the mobile game if they're not trying to be already. And so being able to tap that talent and having worked out, you know, logistics to be able to take those contributions, I think is a critical role in terms of overall, you know, resource base going forward and being able to keep up with what I see as rampant demand. So the two examples that I have, we have one group in computer science that has been working for a while now to do some stuff with our Sakai LMS to integrate. Not the easiest thing, so I'm glad we got some high-level computer science people. And the other was, in fact, the rewrite for Android. I'm also a professor, and so I took one of my classes, which is a Java-based class, and since Android is kind of Java-ish, I was able to carve off and make a project for the best of the best within that class to actually go ahead and port our application to Android. We still had to do maybe 3 weeks, a month's effort after they were done to make it really production-worthy, but they did a lot of the heavy lifting for us, and that was work that we didn't have to do. So I would call us a hybrid model at the moment. I don't know how we'll keep up with the number of things that people are going to want to push into the general mobile space, but I think it's always got to be some kind of oversight and making sure that these people, if they want to contribute, are working on the overall strategic important things for the university as a whole. So that's the model we've taken.
Jill, do you want to weigh in on one end or the other of that spectrum?
Sure. We're not as large of an institution as Brian is, so we probably don't have quite as many willing contributors. But, you know, I think that, you know, what you want is collaboration here. And clearly if, you know, there are some very eager students or faculty members who want to dive into this, into the mobile development area, you know, I think the sooner that you can have a conversation with them about what their ideas are, what they're hoping to accomplish, and begin that dialogue with them, the better it is, because number one, yes, you can align the, you know, strategic goals that you have and make sure that what they're developing you can actually support long term as well. And then, you know, work with them to make sure that it is developed in a way that it can be supported and be useful to the community at large. I know we are already working with members of our computer science faculty here at Dickinson, hoping to set up a number of senior honors projects over the course of next year to help them develop specific mobile apps, one to help our college farm track the information that it needs to collect to maintain its organic certification, another one for our college arborist as he needs to collect information. So they've got, you know, very nice GIS integrated stuff in them, and, you know, they're turning out to be very nice student-type projects, things that can be done over the course of an academic year, and also things that will be useful to members of the college community. So, yeah, I think having the collaborative approach is ideal. You know, long-term, will we be able to sustain it? I don't know. I think that's yet to be seen.
Now, there's collaboration among different groups on campus, and there's collaboration across campuses. And it sounds like a number of campuses are developing apps that relate to bus schedules and class schedules and computer lab seat occupancy and tours of campus. Are we missing an opportunity by not doing a better job of collaborating across campus? Are there do any of the three of you hear what one of your colleagues on the line are doing and saying, gee, couldn't we get that code rather than developing it ourselves? Let me start with Brian.
Sure. I think that there's absolutely room for growth in those kinds of conversations. And I think it will happen just, you know, in terms of keeping, you know, the cost down. And at the end of the day, you know, it's having the service. It's not, you know, whether you present it one way or another is not necessarily going to give you a competitive advantage over any other school. So sharing the costs, I think, makes a great deal of sense. So, you know, I use very, very much engaged in those kind of models with Kowali and for kind of our, you know, back-end systems and Sakai for our LMS and those kind of things. There's the MIT work that was done, the U-Mobile stuff, and I believe Bucknell went down that path. So there's an example of an initiative that has provided at least seed software for people to consume and use. I think the complicating factor on collaboration in the mobile space across all of our institutions is really the fact that we run different sets of software. So, you know, we need to be abstracting out the fact that, yeah, we all have a calendar service. So what's the interface, you know, that mobile is going to expect to adapt to your particular calendar versus, say, you know, Northwestern's calendar? Because the likelihood of them all being the same is very small. So as we make investments in shareable code, we have to remember that mobile is mostly a consumer of existing services, and as such, it needs to be connected to, you know, our back-end PeopleSoft ERPs or Banner or Kowali or Moodle or, you know, events or, you know, whatever the given service may be. So I think, you know, there's opportunities on two fronts. There's opportunities on kind of the front end. We're going to, you know, build, you know, platforms that provide these kind of pre-built solutions for the mobile space, and we can share those. And then I think there's opportunities on the connector side, which is very much more back end and is focused on how you expose the services that would be required on the mobile front from your back-end systems. So I think there's really, you know, there's two areas, and it is, you know, one without the other
you know, is only going to take you a small portion of the way. If there's work put into both sides of that equation, then pretty soon I think it can start to become a bit of a jigsaw puzzle where we've got standard connectors and adapters for, you know, pulling data, you know, from either PeopleSoft or Banner, where you just drop in this shared component that some group wrote, some consortium, and you're putting in the PeopleSoft one because you're a PeopleSoft school, or you put in the Banner one because you're a Banner school. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of where I think things are probably headed. And I know there's a recent effort, I don't know how many of you know about JASIG, and that's a kind of a Java, they sponsor UPortal, CAS, and several other things. They're looking at doing something in the mobile space, and right now IU, along with Florida and a handful of other schools, is looking at doing kind of the same thing in Sakai. But, you know, a lot of this is depends on which end of that spectrum you're working on. Are you working on, you know, having a set of services for display and information capture that truly reside on the mobile side? Or are you talking about connecting it to your back-end systems that are going to need to continue to operate? So that's about all I got to say about that.
Jill, let me give you the option of either following up on that question, or there's been a bit of dialogue there in the chat stream about assessment. Greg Dobbins wonders how you handle this, the assessment component of your mobile efforts. Becky Peters suggests Google Analytics. But that's, of course, hugely important. It came up in Param and Frank's presentation about how you determine what the students want and how they determine what they use and how the non-students on your campus get factored in. So what do you do at Dickinson?
Right. No, that is a great question, right? We don't need to keep supporting things that nobody's looking at and or using so that we can move to things that are useful. You know, for us here at Dickinson, we are using some Google Analytics off of our website, but we actually deployed our mobile app using a cloud-based service, Boopsy. And they provide us analytics with the various menu items that we offer off our mobile site and how frequently they're being accessed. It probably won't come as a big surprise to most of you, but the dining calendars are winning hands down as being the most popular. You know, I'm not surprised by that because that was the thing people were really the most excited about, you know, having that just-in-time information at the ready. And that's what they wanted. You know, I think it's good to continue to evaluate it. You know, you do have to take into consideration the time of year. You know, you're not going to see large traffic perhaps on your catalog search for your campus courses. Maybe, you know, partway through the semester, but right around registration time, you might see a spike in that. So you have to really look at the ebb and flow of what's going on the campus to be able to assess, is it really useful or not? And, you know, I think, you know, we do similar things like that on our websites, on our portals, and a lot of the same assessment can be said. You know, we've been really focused with our conversation here. What is it that our students want? But, you know, we also have faculty and staff that are making use of our mobile services, as well as visitors to campus, alumni, prospective students, and, you know, really trying to make sure we're engaging them through our mobile apps. And, you know, that's something I know we're going to be looking at over the next 3 to 6 months are sort of these, you know, the visitor populations and alumni populations. And a part of our conversation will be how exactly do we go about assessing what's valuable to them and knowing what it is that they're using. You know, someone who's a student here on campus may not find the campus map that valuable, but a visitor is going to probably find it quite valuable. Or perhaps an alum who wants to, you know, visit some of the new buildings that have been built since the last time they were on campus. So I think, you know, with your assessment, really looking at, like I said, the the timeline, where you are in the calendar, and then also who is using the various services is important as well. I'd be curious to hear from the community at large if they're doing any assessment, what types of assessment they're doing, and how they're measuring the success of various services offered through their mobile application.
And just so that all of you know out there who are typing into the chat stream, that this will be captured and posted to the webpage for this webcast session. So if good ideas do emerge out there in the chat in terms of analytics or anything else, they won't be lost. So feel free to type them in. Brian, the question of analytics must be a huge challenge at a place the size of IU. Only got a few minutes left, but can you say a little about how you're doing that?
Sure. So, for us, we've got, the m.iu.edu, and then and on that side, it's fairly easy. You know, you can use kind of the Google Analytics approach or, you know, any web trending kind of approach there. I think it gets a little more difficult when you get into the native applications to do that. So within that, you know, we've got we've built kind of, you know, a capture mechanism that, you know, captures the different anonymously captures the different kinds of click-throughs and such, and records those and aggregates those on a nightly fashion. And I think, you know, it's just one of those things. You can't just slap, Google Analytics on top of it. You could, I suppose, and then you could say, okay, well, I'm emulating this click as a web request, and then you could let Google Analytics do it. But you have to consciously, be planning for that and building it into what you build whenever you talk about building native applications. And that's one topic that I'm interested in. I'm surprised somewhat that we didn't get to, which is, you know, mobile web versus native applications, and or is there any middle ground coming? And maybe that's going to be tackled in the sprint later this week sometime. But I think that's one of the most pressing questions on all of us, because we're not flush with resources. It does take a lot to go down the mobile path. There are some emerging trends there that I think, you know, are interesting and would be useful to have a dialogue. Specifically, there's a new acronym, like Tech Needs Another New Acronym, but it's MEAP, which stands for Mobile Enterprise Application Platform. And so there's vendors kind of springing up in that area. One is that's kind of advanced is Pixis Mobile. And then there's the whole other side of it, which is, well, is mobile web good enough? And, well, some of the reasons that I hear about it not being good enough is, well, you know, the whole thing that Apple and everybody did with all of their great marketing was there's an app for that. So if all you have is a mobile website, sure, they can create a bookmark, but a lot of these users of the iPhones, they don't even know they can do that and add it to their home screen. And so, you know, there's an app for that kind of experience. And I think there might be middle ground coming with technologies like PhoneGap. And PhoneGap is like an open source thing that will let you take essentially a mobile web, primarily mobile web type application, and then run it through the grinder, if you will, and create distributables that can be deployed to the different app stores and will work as a native application on those platforms. But essentially, you're getting, you know, that marketing that you need, but you're not having to necessarily rewrite all the code for all of the different platforms. So I think that in the next 2 years, that's going to be the busy space, if I were to be a betting man.
Well, we're going to keep our eyes open for MEAP. Thank you for giving us that acronym. That about wraps it up. Thank you, Param. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Brian, for engaging in this informal discussion. Thank all of you out there on the web for typing in your questions and comments. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. Visit morantechnology.com.